Yes, sir. Good evening, everyone. Tonight we're on lesson number 17, page 56 in the lesson book. Page number 56, we're in Acts chapter 25. In chapter 26, it said verses 1 through 9, then 9 through 32 of chapter 25. I noticed they did the lesson a little bit backwards of what we're used to seeing. They put the match and the true and false first. And so I don't know. I guess that's good. There you go. Keep you on your toes. I guess pre-thought going into it. As our custom has been, let us read the chapter over. We'll read chapter 25. Have anybody wants to volunteer to read? All right. Will do.
Okay. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from
Caesarea
to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him, to whom I answered, It is not the matter of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such matter of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear me. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great prompt, and was entered into the place of hearing, with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him.
All right, that gets us through chapter 25. Match page 56, match the following. The first one's there is Caesar.
That would be judgment seat.
Yep, Caesar's judgment seat, chapter 25, verse 10. Bernice.
Sister.
Sister. Sister to who? Agrippa? Now, she's a sister to Agrippa. That's what many believe. Agrippa the second sister, more specifically. I find it interesting that it's not mentioned necessarily in the text.
It's interesting that I read that she was approximately 13 years old at this time. And she was actually betrothed, not really married.
Mm-hmm. This would, her being young would explain why there's no quotes or nothing, or it appears that she said nothing through the whole discourse in this. She was just there. She was there to witness. Question number three is Augustus.
Caesar.
He was a Caesar. Multiple verses will bear witness of that. Number four, Festus. Yep, Festus gave the commandment in chapter 25, verse 23. And number five, Agrippa.
King.
King, verse 13 and verse 26, both label him as being King Agrippa. True or false, Festus was a fair and honest ruler.
False.
Why would you say that's false?
A couple of three things. One is, even though he pretended to be a strong leader, he was actually a weak leader because he was looking to find favor of the Jews from some of the things and the decisions that he made. He went, later on, if I understand correctly, he was, there was some wickedness and things that he did that were despicable. But at this time, he was actually trying to just buddy-buddy with people to give them what they wanted.
Yeah, it seems that he wanted to go along, to get along, sort of thing. And because he could have ended it right there. Could have ended it, Paul been set free, and gone back to business, but it didn't turn out that way. Also, it seems that he wanted somebody to blame as well, or it seems to me, if he lets it go this route, then he could blame the Jews for it, instead of his being his decision. And I, a little further down, we talk about the letter, you know, the things that he might or might not write. He seemed to be undecided. Or he wanted to be undecided, it seemed.
Or keep his, like, his
options open.
His hands off of it. I mean,
yeah. Keep his hands off of it.
One of the things, too, is Caesarea was the capital. And he wanted to take Paul back to Jerusalem because that's what they did. And he knew that if he took him to Jerusalem, he'll, or at least I read between the lines and come to that conclusion.
Well, he knew about the lying in wait.
Yeah.
He knew about it. How could he not know about it? You know, it was such a big deal. Number two is, after more than 2 years, the Jews' hatred of Paul had diminished.
Paul's. Chapter 24, verse 27.
Yep, they were ready to go against him. Number three, Festus was a crowd-pleasing politician.
True.
True, very true, for reasons we just stated. Number four, Festus knew exactly what to write to Caesar.
False.
Chapter 25, verse 26. Agrippa was fully acquainted with the Jewish religion.
True. That's going to be chapter 26, verse 3, because at first I thought it was not chapter 25, verse 19, but when I got to 26, verse 3, Paul's telling me, I know you know this.
Also, verse 26 of the same of 26 or 27 rather, the same chapter, he kind of asked him again. So you got two verses there to support that.
I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
On the question four, Festus knew exactly what to write to Caesar. Of course, it says that he made the statement that he didn't know what to write. But to me, it's one of those situations where he had to know what was going on.
Yeah. I guess the thing it gives me gives him a little wiggle room. My mind is he's not heard the trial. Like in the previous chapter, all the characters there, they all sat through the trial. It had one of the trials. This would be trial number two, or is it three? It's more, anyway, it's more than the first one. And he hasn't sat through one of those yet. So I'm wondering if that kind of made him have some hesitation as well. Either way, he's saying after we've heard, well, no, I will have somewhat to write, and he should know what he needs to write to Caesar.
Verse 24, it seems to me that he's saying that he knew what was going on, and he just. I get the impression that he was covering himself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's wanting to wave. He's wanting cover.
But anyway, you can look at it, he didn't want to write to Caesar to protect himself,
When you get to the end of chapter 26, to me it's apparent that he knew what to write. At that point, but that's after he'd done listening to the reasoning. And then I think at this point he had his mind made up as well. Because
yeah.
He'd heard enough.
He was only a governor. Here he is writing Caesar. And Caesar's Roman. And, they talk a lot about Caesar being a good thing. He can put you to death. So I would think I would be a little tippy-toed around the situation.
Yeah. But also they've already put down an uproar in the previous or two chapters ago. They'd put down an uproar, and to me that's the why I think it's crazy that he would want to bring him from Caesarea to Jerusalem in case it got relit. You know, they'd get fired back up, and then he'd have to do some explaining for sure, at least to the king. But also, after Agrippa hears the case, he's got the backing of Agrippa to whatever he writes. And I've even wondered if perhaps that Agrippa might have even signed a copy, putting his approval on it as well. I don't know. Number six, Paul was very selective regarding those whom he preached, to whom he preached. False. Anybody want to listen? He was there.
He preached to some that didn't want to listen.
That's right. He preached to some that didn't want to listen. Now we get to our thought and discussion questions where we'll discuss the text. Question number one is...
But maybe he'd heard a lot about Jesus' sermons and how he would say he didn't have to hear what he hear.
Perhaps. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility at this point in history. Question number one is, where did Festus go after becoming governor?
Jerusalem.
And whose case was immediately presented to Festus, and what did they desire of him?
They wanted to kill him,
yeah. And kill him, and put the case against him and kill him. And I've wondered if the reason Festus went to Jerusalem to start with after the election, after becoming governor, was so that he could see for himself what these things which I've heard, is it true, and go and see that, and then see what the situation is, if there's any other intervention that needs to happen. Because remember, you've had the uproar, you've had Paul having the centurion to pull him away from the crowd, that had to put the crowd down. They've had the plot to come about to kill Paul. The Jews are going to call him back in the judgment hall, and then they were going to listen to him and try him again, except they were going to kill him. And so, as we discussed, I believe it was last week, all this huge group of military people that had to be called in to just do the escort. And so I'm thinking, yeah, that's... That might have been election year. I decided I'm going to set this one out. Let somebody else be governor, but in my place. So there's a lot of things going on. So he would need to go check this out and make sure what all these things he's heard and perhaps even partly seen are true. Question number two is, where did Festus agree to hear the charges against Paul? Yep, he agreed to do it in Caesarea. And I believe that's, verse 4. Paul is saying, desiring favor against him, verse 3, that he would send him to Jerusalem, lying in wait in the way to kill him. So there's a reason to not do it. And then he makes that decision in verse 4. Paul should be kept at Caesarea, that he himself would depart shortly thither. How many days was it before he decided to go?
10.
It wasn't the next day. It was some days had passed. Question number, what are we on? 2B? What did the Jews lay against Paul?
Many grievous charges.
Yep. Many. They laid a charge against him against their law, the law of Moses, against the temple for defaming the temple, and then claimed that he was plotting against Caesar. Those three things we find in verse number 8, that they had pulled against him. There was these grievous charges. Question number 3 is, match the following charges with Paul's denials. Letter A was, he was a ringleader of Nazareth, or Nazarene. Mover of sedition. Yep, had done nothing against Caesar, number 3. And then, who also hath gone about to profane the temple?
Paul said he had done nothing against the law of the Jews.
All right. I put number 1 for C and number 2 for A.
I did too, but I didn't know.
You can find it on the first column. I find it interesting that you had to go to the previous chapter to find these three statements, chapter 24, verses 5 and 6. And then these other three statements, you can find in chapter 25 and verse number 8. where he's about to make the defense. While he answered for himself, Paul, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offered anything at all. So he's saying, I'm not guilty of any of these charges.
Well, sedition has to be against Caesar.
Right, that's
because
by definition.
Sedition and the leader, you know,
yep.
Two match up.
Yep.
Because B is three.
Yep. Yeah, by definition, B has to be number three, not against, or nor against Caesar.
Did you know on C?
Yep.
Paul, one of his claims was that they knew that he had cleansed himself to go into the temple.
Yeah, one of his defending remarks in the previous chapter, and they had accused him of taking a Gentile into the temple, and the way it's worded is what I find fascinating. Is they worded, it's worded in such a way as they thought he took a Gentile into the temple. They had, nobody could verify it, but yet the accusation is there. Does that sound familiar? We say that all the time. You know, people in politics, especially in the last 5-6 years, they all make these false accusations. Everybody runs with it, get everybody stirred up. It turns out to not be true because it was hearsay.
And we clued.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And well, even there was something. Yeah, weak leadership in different areas, not just in one.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
The Nazarenes here, are those the ones that talk about their hair?
Yeah, take the Nazarite vow. Yeah, I think so. Yep. Let's see, the Nazarite vow was with their hair, and it wasn't to drink any wine as well, wasn't it?
Well, what did they do to their hair?
Wouldn't cut it.
Yeah.
Yep. See, because if you remember, Saul, the best example we have of that is Samson, because he was going to be a Nazarite from the womb, from when he was born. And So he didn't drink wine, nor did he cut his hair. And, of course, we know the story of that, the cutting of the hair. In his case, that's where his strength lied. And so they made him weak by cutting his hair, but that was against his will and against the vow. Number four, do you think that Festus was convinced of Paul's innocence? I thought he was, but at this point in the story, I think it's still up for debate. Because later on is when he writes that he is innocent in end of chapter 26. If he believed that he was innocent, he didn't want to do what is necessary to set him loose, did he? Yeah. That's right. He would let somebody die before he would give up political clout or political points. Interesting. It's funny how that people just hadn't changed. That's, you know, this is nearly right at 2,000 years ago, and people still hadn't changed. It's still the way that it's always been. Question. Next part of the question is, why then did he not release him?
Because he wanted to please the Jews, and if he let him go free, that was not going to please the Jews.
What's the second reason he could put down?
He appealed to Caesar.
Yep, he'd already appealed to Caesar. So there's really two reasons that you could put there, the pleasing of the Jews.
I read something that's very interesting, or at least it is to me. The person doing the writing said that in this case, if Paul appealed to Caesar, he had the authority to say, your appeal is denied.
That's right.
And also, he had the right not only to override it, but he had also the right to enforce it.
That's right. But there again, it seems that they didn't want to give in to the political backlash that possibly would have happened out of Jerusalem. Number five is, why did Paul appeal to Caesar's judgment seat?
I think because God had told him he was going to go wrong.
Yep. That, and I also thought about maybe perhaps he thought this was going to be able to get a fairer trial. But he already knew, yeah, you're right. God had told him, you're going to Rome. You're going to Rome. You're going to testify to me there. Next page, 57. Why did most people make an appeal to Caesar as a last resort?
Because he could give you the death sentence.
Yeah, he was an evil person. I also thought about that would be the highest court in the land, be like similar to the Supreme Court. Once that court ruled, no other court could probably take it down. Or I don't think they would be able to take it down. Also, I thought about, you know, Paul's appeal, you know, as well. He knew he was going. God told him he was. And I also wondered if this was not rubbing it in their face a little bit too, to appeal to Caesar. And, you know, have you ever thought about it? Thought about it, he's kind of saying, your judgment doesn't matter because I've appealed to Caesar? Even though, like you said, he had the power, at least Festus did, had the power to deny it and say, no, you can't do this. But he didn't.
Well, he was Roman, and Paul was a Roman.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the reason he could appeal to Caesar at all.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because if from the Jew side, if it was something that appealed to Caesar, it had to be done through the political system, not just a request, because they were not. They were more like prisoners and exiles in another land, as far as the way they were looked upon, and they supposedly had their own court system and things where they were to deal with their own stuff within the confines of the law that way. Question number six is, how does Paul's statement in verse 11 show his approval of capital punishment in some cases? Verse number 11 says, For I am offended, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal to Caesar. So the question is what about capital punishment? Well, he believed that the authority lied within the government, didn't he? So what do you think about today? Does the government have the authority to carry out the same thing today? I think it does too, because of what the scripture says about the government not taking the sword in vain, and also about pronouncing judgment. Go back to the book of Romans chapter 13. Those things are kind of outlined, are kind of laid out there that they have a special place in society that we don't have. Government is, I know it's hard to swallow sometimes, but it is sanctioned by God. And it is. Things are allowed to happen by God's allowing it to happen or causing it to happen, whichever. And a government that doesn't do what he wants to do or will not fulfill his purpose, taken out of the way. It ceases to be a government, ceases to exist over time. Now, God is very patient and very merciful with the government, because we see in the Old Testament as some of the examples, some that went to doing evil, sometimes it would go on for for a couple hundred years before God's judgment was really lowered on it because of his long suffering. That also gives me hope and makes me think that in that long suffering phase, that God is allowing men space to repent. He's allowing them space to turn and to do his will, and then when it keeps being ignored, they're taken out of the way. The government will fall and something else will take its place. And generally, throughout history, secular history as well as biblical history, it sometimes becomes apparent in secular history, or it does to me, that God uses other nations to judge nations. He will let them come in and take over. Usually a government that's persecuting their people, usually you see two things that seem to make governments fall quickly that I've noticed from history. Number one is the way they treat their own people. The way they treat especially religion in regards to their own people. The second thing that I've noticed is when they try to become world conquerors. That one's 100% fail. It fails every time.
Somebody tell Putin.
Well, I don't think he's trying to take over the world, but if that becomes his mindset, he will fail. God won't let it happen. Some reason God won't let it happen. Now, why is that? We'll go down this trail just for a second. We'll come back around.
Because he wants to be the highest power.
What about the prophecy in Ezekiel? What about the prophecy in Daniel of the statue that we got the chart hanging up out there in the foyer? All the kingdoms that was represented in that, they're all going to fall. Well, they've already fallen. And then the last one, the one that's going to succeed, is not a kingdom at all. It's the church. So the church is the last worldwide entity that God's going to allow to exist, if that prophecy is true.
Gertie may remember this. When I was in the first grade at Chalk Springs State, and she was in the second, there were two boys that were twins that was in the eighth grade. And Miss Mary Smith grew with an iron hand. And they, when we went out for recess, we went out the same time, had designated areas for each class. The twins were in the eighth grade, and they were grown men. And when I say that, they were, and they got in a fight out there on the playground. And she called for her satchel, which had her leather strap in it. And she lit into both of them. Now, she didn't tap them on her thighs, or she dog whipped both of them. They were begging her to quit. Now, my point is, all of the other students had gathered around to watch. I said to myself, I will never cross her. In the next 7 years that I was in school under her, I never crossed her.
She made sure that wasn't going to happen. That was her insurance. Well, think about it. Even back in the Old Testament, whenever, you know, Sunday night we're reading through Exodus, what happened after the plagues? And Pharaoh got knocked down. What happened? Everybody around the world, whenever the Egyptians come, or the Israelites would come through, were encountering by, they said, we've heard about your God. We're not going to cross him. And they'd give them what they wanted and all kinds of stuff because of the fear of the God that they didn't know anything about, but they knew what his power was. Kind of the same principle, isn't it?
And the Egyptians, when they left, Israelites didn't plunder Egypt, but Egypt gave them.
That's right. Moses told them, he said, when you leave, they're going to give you stuff. And they did. They give them the gold, they give them the earrings, they give them all kinds of gold. And on the way out, they just won't get rid of him. They just won't get rid of him. So we're tired of this. And once again, if you think about it, it's due to bad leadership.
And think about David and the Ark of the Covenant. The Philistines, who had captured the Ark of the Covenant, decided that they didn't want it anymore because they were having so much many problems.
Oh, yeah, causing all kinds of trouble.
Time to take it back.
Yep. Take it back. Take it away from us. We don't want this curse upon us. Well, anyway, back to the capital punishment question. I believe that through the teachings of Scripture, I used to didn't feel this way, but I studied it further, has the authority and has the power to carry out punishment by death. But we as individuals do not. That idea is not in Scripture, not in the New Testament at all. Because over and over, what do we read? Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Isn't that what the Thessalonians were told? Don't worry about it, God will take care of it. And then Paul talks about how, you know, fear him who is able to kill the body and soul in hell. Said, worry about that. Worry about that. Let him do it. He can do much worse than you can, and that's the truth. He can do much worse than what we can. Question number 7 is, who came to Caesarea at this time?
King Agrippa and Bernice.
Yep, King Agrippa and Bernice. Which Herod was this? Which Herod Agrippa was this? I believe it's commonly believed as King Agrippa II. That seems to be an agreement amongst scholars on that. What relationship was Bernice to Drusilla?
Sisters.
Yep, possibly sisters. You mentioned it earlier. Yep.
Well, they were probably.
Yep.
And see, that's one reason I thought that maybe he knew more about the religion. Well, that's not wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, it kind of worked out.
Well, we kind of went over it in the true and false there, didn't we?
You know, we read the lesson.
Yeah, that's good. Question number 8 is, what did Festus declare to Agrippa? Say again.
He declared Paul's cause.
Yep. He declared Paul's cause or Paul's case. How does what Paul said to the Jews show that our laws today are very much on the same order as the Roman laws?
Well, you have a right of a trial to face your accusers and to explain your side of it.
Yep.
You also have a right of appeal.
What's that?
Right of appeal.
Right of appeal, yep. I don't think people realize that there's not a lot of countries around the world that allow that. We're at, you know, our country is one of them, which is, to me, a more fair and just system than to just be accused and have the trial, or not even a trial, just a mock trial and then thrown into prison. You must face your accusers. And just as it is in this country, whenever the accuser does not show up or there are no accusers, the judge has no choice but to call it a mistrial or throw the case out because there's no accusers. Just as if the Jews hadn't have shown up, even at this point, they'd been thrown out. There'd been no need to go further because there was none accusers were there. None of the accusers were there. Actually, we get to Rome, we'll kind of see this play out. It'd be the same thing. Or actually not the same thing, but when they get to Rome, it'll be that accusers don't show up. That's right. I know some would rather it be guilty to proven innocent, but no, innocent to proven guilty. That's kind of the the order of things that they have here. Let's stop right here. Question number 9. I think we'll have some discussion beginning there. So we'll pick up with question number 9 next week, and I think we'll probably be able to finish the lesson. Unless somebody else has any comments or questions.